This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. How are you today? It is a Friday. TGIF, we're glad you're here with us on Sports Daily, trying to get your weekend started early. We're glad to be here as a part of your Friday. Thanks for listening to us on KFH. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, all the different places you take us in, including the Odyssey app. Maybe you're listening to us as a podcast right now. We appreciate you anyway that you take in the show. Jacob Albrock here alongside Tommy Caster. Max is producing for us and taking your calls at 869-1240. Lots of good stuff to come today. We're going to take you out to spring training again with our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson. We're getting closer and closer to the start of the Major League Baseball season. A couple of news items with the Royals to get to. Will Jack Caglione ever pitch? Those kinds of things getting a little traction this week. So we'll talk to Jalen about that, just about how the team looks and are they being severely underrated? We think they are by most prognosticators, including Las Vegas. So we'll get into all of that as well on the show here today. Shockers, winners last night at Rice. Snap a little losing streak they had. Not one that anybody was overly concerned with, but a losing streak nonetheless. So good to see them get back on track in that win last night. We'll break that down. We'll look ahead to the season finale this weekend. We will sort of take a look at what we think of this season overall. It has been an interesting one, to say the least. So we will get to all of that, all things Shockers, in just a little bit. Another wild and crazy day in the NFL. Another marquee player or two potentially on the move. We'll get to that as well. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm glad that it's finally Friday. I'm glad that we are getting you ready for that Friday. It's been a long, long week. And so glad to be here. Looking forward to jumping right in.
It will be a great weekend. We're going to get some good weather back. It's been a little bit, gloomy this week weather-wise. Yeah. So it'll be nice to get that sunshine back a little bit. Ready for the spring. Everybody's ready for the spring. So here's...
We're going to get a warm-up, I think,
of the weather,
next week,
Tommy,
though, aren't
we? It is the 7th. What's that?
Aren't we going to get a warm-up next week? I believe that's the case.
Yeah. So going to my handy Storm Team 12 app right now, we are 10 days away from the start of March Madness here in Wichita, Tommy, which means the 10-day forecast comes into play beginning right now. And I'm just looking we're still one day away. We're still one day away. That's the week of the 17th.
Right.
I'm only seeing through the 16th. I'm not very good at math. But on that 16th, here in Wichita. It looks like we're at about 58, partly cloudy. Right before that, it's a little bit nicer than that. So we're going to get up into the close to 80. I talked to Ross yesterday, and he said, you know, without looking at the way far out outlook, which it'd still be on, he's optimistic we'll be able to get some good weather. So hopefully it'll warm up a little bit. We'll start checking that next week, because that's what we're looking for now. How much is Mother Nature going to play along here soon as we get ready for March Madness basketball in Wichita? Can't wait for it. Can't wait for these conference tournaments either. We've got one more to go for all our teams in the men's side before we get there. And on the women's side, they're already here. So you've got K-State alive in the Big 12 tournament, and they won yesterday, and they play at 11 o'clock today against West Virginia, a team they're looking for a little revenge. Doesn't look like they're going to have Ayoka Lee back. She is in a boot yesterday during warmups. I think the hope is maybe for the NCAA tournament, so they're going to have to grind it out without her. We'll see. Wichita's Zianna Walker, Phillipsburg's Taryn Sides had nice games yesterday for the Cats. We'll see if they can follow it up, but the postseason's here. I can't wait for the postseason. Tommy, it is, and it's more than just like March Madness like it normally is, right? Because it really starts for us next week for K-State and Wichita State. Like, they got to win their tournaments to get in. So we're going to get that vibe next week. And then, of course, KU will see where they land in the tournament. Not in Wichita, but somewhere. And it'll be fun. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, you know, we'd love to see both K-State and Wichita State continue to build momentum going into their respective conference tournaments. You had both of them this week win. Kansas State winning on the road at Cincinnati, Wichita State winning last night at Rice. And
Both
went ugly, but they both get victories. Both of them are back home this weekend. You've got Kansas State at home against Iowa State on Senior Day. That's going to be a huge challenge. But if the Wildcats can get that done, you know, then I think you feel better about their chances going into the Big 12 tournament, especially if Coleman Hawkins can get himself as close to 100% as possible before the Big 12 tournament. And then with Wichita State, you've got Senior Day on Sunday against Tulsa. Again, if you can get, you know, the final two regular season games as wins, and they've got one of those down, another one to go, then you, again, feel like you've got a little bit of a mini winning streak going into the American tournament next week as well. So, even though both of these teams, it's not like they're competing for a regular season conference title or anything at this point, I do think that both of their games this weekend against their respective opponents are important for them and important for how they feel going into their respective conference tourneys.
Yeah, I think important for different reasons too, right? I'm with you on that. I do think they're important. I think it's important for KU.
Yeah.
I think it's important for all three of them. But probably at this point, not going to alter my outlook for any of them in the tournament. I think I've seen enough over the past couple of weeks. It was good to see Wichita State just do what it needed to do last night. Like, if there is disaster for any of the three teams on, because they all get them at home this weekend, right? All the senior days are at home.
Right.
If there's disaster for any of them, it's not going to, I don't think I'll alter what I think about their chances in their respective conference tournaments. We kind of know now. I think we've seen K-State and Wichita State back on track enough that we know they've just, you know, they kind of both have a puncher's chance. I'd say Wichita State probably a slightly better chance just based on the grind of what the Big 12 has to offer. But we know they both have to get ugly. We know that's how they're going to have to win those games. And, you know, KU, we've talked about ad nauseum. Nothing changes there either. They're capable of beating anybody. They're capable of losing to anybody. Pretty odd year for them as well. But we'll get into all of that. We'll get into the Shockers next. Real quick, thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a sponsor of the program. We had our beer tasting last night, Tommy. It was delicious. What do we have? Free State
Brewery. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was wonderful.
A sour, a stout.
I love that oatmeal IPA stout, by the way. That was fun.
Yeah, I usually just kind of drink light see-through beer. So they were all fine. I really liked their lager, their seasonal lager, but it was fun. It was a good event, good crowd, had some snacks. And then you know what we did after we had the beer tasting? We went to the bar.
Of course we did.
Beer.
We absolutely did. We enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I always think about, you know, you and I and our preference for the light beer, the older that we get. I always think of Landman with Billy Bob Thornton, you know, and
how
he drinks ultras, and he's like, I quit drinking years ago. Well, you're drinking a Michelob Ultra. That's not alcohol. That's not alcohol. Yeah, I quit drinking years ago.
I quit drinking a long time. I'll just take an Ultra.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel that in my bones.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I do.
So it was great. It was a big crowd at the bar last night, too. A couple of great listeners said what's up at the bar, and we appreciate them as well. Always like seeing. That's one of the cool things about being out there is how many people listen to the show and then come talk to us about what's on the show. And so I love that. I love that. And shout out to those two guys who came and talked to us about the show yesterday at the bar at Crestview. So appreciate their support. Give them a call. Ask them about their memberships. When we come back, Shocker Talk next on Sports Daily.
Think warm, think palm trees, think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Your legend begins aboard the Disney Destiny, the all-new ship from Disney Cruise Line, sailing November of 2025. Log in and listen to KFH on Odyssey for a chance to win a trip for four to set sail on the Disney Destiny in the national contest. All you need to do, listen for an hour on the Odyssey app. Find out more at kfhradio.com. Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Castor, and we are glad to be here with you. Shockers win last night, 63-59 over Rice. Told you, one-and-a-half-point line didn't seem like enough. They do ultimately end up covering it. I thought it'd be a little more, but they get it done. Winning on the road's hard. I get it. There's a lot of interesting things in the game. Let's start with the game, Tommy, and then we can kind of blow it out a little, you know, wider angle on the season as they'll, you know, play the finale before we are on the air again. But last night it was a game. Look, they won ugly, right? They didn't shoot the three. At 2 for 14, they didn't even get 40% from the field. But they get a 63-59 win over Rice, and they do it. They got to the free throw line a ton, which is going to continue to be something they must do to win these games. They must. I don't know who you call your game's MVP. They're, you know, Harlan Beverly off the bench scoring okay. Ronnie DeGray dominated on the boards, and then how about Bijan Cortez again late in the game? Tommy coming up with a clutch bucket when they needed it the most. If I told you Wichita State got a nothing burger out of a game where Corey Washington could only give you 16 minutes, that's been dangerous. You know, that's a dangerous thing. Well, they got it done last night with that factor. So there were a lot of little things, I think, and sort of an ugly win that you can be pretty optimistic about if you're a Shocker fan.
Yeah, it wasn't just, you know, Ronnie DeGray with the rebounding in general. It was his rebounding in the second half, and not just him, but Quincy Ballard and Corey Washington. All of those guys getting after it, rebounding, crashing those boards. And that was, I think, the key difference maker. You ask about an MVP. I mean, it's hard to, you know, overlook a guy that had 16 rebounds in the game and Ronnie DeGray in a game that absolutely required that because the shots just weren't falling for Wichita State. You don't get 16 rebounds from Ronnie DeGray, you don't win that basketball game. So I would definitely probably put that MVP on his shoulders for the game last night just because of the way that he was able to get after it rebounding.
6 offensive rebounds, by the way. So I think last night gives us a good story sort of what Wichita State's going to need to do. Like if we project it out into the conference tournament, like what would Wichita State have to do to be able to win the American Athletic Conference? Okay, let's think about that. I mean, sure, yeah, they could come out and shoot really well. That'd be great. Probably not going to happen. At least not every game. Maybe it happens once. Maybe it times out and happens against a really good team. That'd be awesome. But I don't think that's what you look for to count on in the tournament. I think that, you know, they must play good defense for sure, which they have. I mean, when was the last time? I mean, UAB and outside of UAB, it's been, I mean, we're looking at more than a calendar month since they've had a bad defensive game. Oddly enough, you got to probably go back to Tulsa, as I'm just looking here, which is who they'll play on Sunday. So it'd be nice to see them maybe come in and shut them down. But you're talking about one out of like their last 10 games has been a game where you didn't feel really good about their defense. Has to start there, no question about it. That must be how Wichita State wins basketball games. Take that a step further, and I don't have them game by game pulled up, but they need to, at least, if they don't win the rebounding battle, they got to be right there. They can't get dominated on the boards, okay? For me, anyway. They can't turn the ball over, which has not been a problem for this team in totality. You know, Bijan Cortez had too many last night again, but now he's giving you something to sort of offset that wild and crazy nature that he's always had. So that's good, too. So for me, we're going through 3 things here, Tommy. I haven't even talked about the offense because I just don't count on the offense. And then probably the other thing offensively, they just have to get to the free throw line. Offense is not going to come easy for the Shockers. It hasn't come easy all season. Don't expect it. Expect them to get to the line, though, because that's how they've started to play, whether it's Harlan Beverly. How many did he have last night? 5 free throws, of course. Xavier Bell, we know his proficiency to get there. And anybody else, get to the free throw line, shoot a ton of them, and shoot a high percentage. If they can do those, 4 things, you're going to have a chance. But it has to start on the defensive side of the ball, and they must, if they don't play a good defensive game, they're going to be done.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that this team has shown throughout the course of the season they're not going to put on an offensive clinic most often.
Almost never.
It might be a bonus when it happens. That, you know, we've seen a couple of games where that has happened, and that might be due more to the opponent they're facing and the way that opponent plays defense than anything else. But I don't think you count on that game in and game out. If it's a bonus, if it happens, you know, you tip your cap to it and you say, hey, it was a good offensive game, but that's not what our calling card is. Our calling card is playing defense, getting to the free throw line, and being able to rebound. And if they can do those things well, then when that happens, and last night is a prime example of that, you don't have to have a highly proficient offensive night to be able to win a basketball game, at least in this conference, against a team that, let's face it, Rice is not very good. They're at the bottom of the conference. They're 4-14, they're getting to that point. They're pacing on that way in the conference under a first-year head coach. You know, that's a team that the Shockers should beat. They did beat, even despite a bad shooting night. So that sort of thing, I think you can hang your hat on a little bit. Like, look, guys, we don't need to go out there and shoot the lights out. If it happens, great. We'll be happy that we did. But we've got to do these other things really, really well. And they were able to do that last night.
That was, I mean, it was a great, now, you don't, you know, Rice, like, oh, they beat Rice by 4. Like, not trying to sit here and say that's a great performance.
No, not at all.
But it doesn't matter. Like it is their path to success in the conference tournament, right? I don't want to sit here with one game to go and say they have to shoot it better. They got to make more than 3 3-pointers in a game. They have to do. It's not going to happen. And the good news for them, for fans, is we've now seen that since the calendar turned to February. We know that now, right? They know. They don't have, like, doesn't matter. It doesn't win them all ugly, because that's what it takes. That's fine.
And how many of those games a season ago did Wichita State lose, you know, in their first year under Paul Mills? Like, they're learning how to grind out wins when they don't have their best stuff offensively. And that's a major difference from a season ago, when so many of those games, you know, you look back on and you're like, man, they could have won that game and they didn't. And now it's the flip side. Now, of course, you know, you can always point back to January and you wish you had January back for the Shockers for sure. But now down the stretch, at least, you know, in the last month, they found ways to win games even when they don't have their best stuff.
So it's been, and I'm 100% with you. I'm looking back. Wichita State was picked fourth in the league this year. There's UAB was picked to win. Wichita State was picked fourth. Yeah, that's this year, right? Yeah, they were picked fourth this year.
Yep.
So they will probably finish seventh. I don't think they can jump FAU because they lost that game. I don't think they can jump FAU. They beat FAU. Did they play them twice? Do they have a chance to jump one more spot here? They might.
No.
So they beat FAU. Yeah, they only played them
one time.
So
played them on the road.
I am assuming here, and you know what they say about assuming. I'm assuming that the tiebreaker for two teams when they've played once is head-to-head. So if that's the case, and FAU loses their finale and Wichita State wins its finale, but then you've got a Temple situation as well. Which, what did they, this is, I hate these big conferences, like it gets so hard. Remember, they lost to Temple, so I don't know what all the tiebreakers are. Anyway, right now they sit seventh. They could get as high as sixth in theory. They could drop as far as eighth in theory, and that's it. So somewhere between six and eight, they were picked fourth. How do we feel about that? I think if you'd have told me that before the season, I'd have said that's a disappointing season for sure. Based on the way it all played out, what do you think? Has it been disappointing?
I think that if you, in the context of the way it all played out, because I agree with you, if you had told me at the beginning of the season that they would finish eighth after being picked fourth, and, you know, obviously we all know they're going to need to win the conference tournament if they want to go to the NCAA tournament. Yeah, I think in that context, you would look at it and say, yeah, that's disappointing. However, if you would have told me in late January that the Shockers would, you know, and again, we're assuming that they win on Sunday at home against Tulsa, that they would finish the regular season at 500 in conference play after the way they started in conference play, and they were down at the very bottom of the American, and they climbed their way up to eighth, I would take that. I'd be like, well, absolutely. Like that, yeah, it's disappointing overall from a macro view, but from the way that they started and the way that, you know, if they, let's say that they win on Sunday, you're looking at what, a 7-2 finish in the conference season after that? You'd take that for sure.
You'd take it for sure. I agree with you 100%. It's strange because I do think, and the reality is too, like if you look at the standings, East Carolina is who FAU plays, by the way. So certainly a sort of a toss up game, I would say, if they get up that, so maybe they can get up to, you know, to sixth, which feels better because then you're a game behind really the rest of the field. Well, you had that North Texas game where you didn't get a good shot at the end. So I think they're probably right there. Here's the other way I think we look at it, because they're not going to finish high enough to satisfy our preseason expectations, no matter what happens. But I'm with you. We can be satisfied with the year because of how hot they've been to finish it. I think even more than the standings and where they finish, you got to look at it as like, where do you feel like they stack up in the league, right? The net right now has them as the fifth best team in the league behind Memphis, North Texas, UAB, FAU, a team they beat. That's probably to me a little better way to look at it, I think. And I think we'd probably be okay with that. I think our optimism let us think it was going to be higher than that. And if we started the season over and played the entire conference schedule again, I think it would be.
I think it would be too. But then I also think that, you know, there were some warning signs even back in non-con, right? When they get boat raced by Florida, and Florida's turned out to be a really good team, but they get boat raced by Florida. They lose at home to UMKC. They struggle at home against friends. You know, like there were a couple of things, and I know that sandwiched in between there, they beat Kansas State by 20. You know, like I know all that stuff happened, but there were some red flags, like some warning signs early in the non-con.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, at least for me, I can only speak for myself. I'm kind of in the back of my mind like, okay, something like this might not go particularly well. But then that optimism sort of won it over and like, they'll be fine. They get into conference play, they'll be fine. And then they start off the conference season 1-7 and they lose to teams that they should beat. And not just like teams that you think that they should be, but teams that they are metrically better than. Like all of the metrics saying that they're significantly better than these teams that they lost to in the month of January. And I'm sure that if you were to talk to Paul Mills, the one constant would be, we wish we had the month of January back. Absolutely.
I think so too. Look, and here's what's really cool about it to me and what I think I've learned over the course of this year, because we have been at points this year as critical as anybody ever will be at Wichita State. It deservedly so. They deserved it. Now, though, I think as we've played through it, my optimism for the program is probably as high as it was ever going to be this year in reality, because I think a couple of things, even when they were struggling, and we talked about this at the time, like KU clearly had a locker room problem for a little while this year. K-State clearly had a locker room problem for a little while this year. I never got that vibe from Wichita State. Even when they were struggling the most, that never, to me, bled out in anything anybody was saying. Obviously, coach was frustrated, but the players kept the same messaging. Like, the effort was always there. They just weren't playing well. So I think that's one thing that can give you optimism about the direction of a program. I think the other more important thing is I really think we have seen coaching chops from Paul Mills and his staff to completely reinvent this team. It's one thing to reinvent yourself after a really bad start to the season, whatever. Remember, Wichita State was great before the Florida game, right? In a totally different way than they're great now. They in the middle of conference play, redefined who they are X's and O's wise. At least it seems that way to me. And to be able to do that like that in the middle of a season, in a season where at other times you had found success a different way, that's pretty impressive to me. And it gives me a lot of confidence that there's a coaching staff there that is going to find the strengths of its team. Now, it took longer than we would have liked, right? Of course it did. But they got there. Like, I feel good about, again, no matter what happens on Sunday, don't really care. It's a senior day. I hope they have a great senior day. But I am confident in the abilities, I think, of the coaches to make that drastic of a change in the middle of a season. It's not an easy thing to do.
And don't forget that not only did they make that change, but the players bought into it as well. I mean, there's a resiliency that is remarkable there, where, you know, you're dealing with college kids. And it would be pretty easy for them after you start conference play 1-7 and you've got, you know, all these big time expectations and hopes and dreams crater in front of you, to be like, we're not going to buy into a wholesale change in the way that we're going to be doing things throughout the second half of the conference season. And they did. I mean, I feel like there's been that buy-in. You don't feel that division, at least as far as like battling identities and all of that. It was almost like Paul Mills and his staff said, we have to do it differently. And the team said, let's go. And it hasn't always been pretty. Case in point, last night wasn't a pretty game, but they found a way to win. And I think, again, I mentioned the word resiliency. It's resiliency when even when your offense, and especially in the second half, isn't working and the shots are not falling, for you to then have enough toughness mentally to still be able to go out and play elite level defense. And that's what they did. I mean, I can't even imagine how difficult it would be when your shots aren't falling. And I'm talking from an individual basis here, when your shots aren't falling, to then be just as locked in on the other end of the court and to try to shut down your opponent defensively. Because at least I'm probably weak-minded. I would just be thinking about the shot that I just missed and the fact I missed the last five and that we're not able to get anything to fall. They played outstanding defense in the second half, even while they weren't shooting the ball well at all. That's really difficult to do.
They've done that a lot, too. It's not just one time. And the worst part of their season, what you're talking about, is what would get away from them. They'd stop defending the three, right? Like, they would just, and I don't want to call it lazy. I'm not a smart enough basketball mind to call it lazy. So I'm not going to do that. But whatever it was.
Preoccupied, they maybe? Like, I would be preoccupied. Like, man, I can't hit the broadside of a barn right now.
They weren't getting there. Now, those lapses have stopped.
Yeah.
Right? They have redefined themselves to some degree. Not totally offensively, but they definitely don't even, like, threes, just whatever. Like, if we hit a couple, that's awesome. Otherwise, we got to take care of the basketball. We got to get to the free throw line. And
the Shockers, by the way, when we talked about their defense, but I mean, and you mentioned turnovers right then. They had one turnover in the second half.
Yeah, they don't turn the ball.
So even the fact that, you know, again, like when you're not shooting the ball well, you have to lean on those other things. You have to take care of it. So you can't give away possessions. And then you have to be able to lock them down and get rebounds. I mean, you know, even though, and I'm reading the, you know, Taylor Eldridge article from last night, too. I didn't realize that even though they got a bunch of offensive rebounds down the stretch, the second chance points weren't there either. So it really didn't matter what they did. They weren't scoring.
You just had to lock them down.
But you have to lock them down in other ways.
Isn't it funny, too? Now we look at, as you know, one game to go before the postseasons. The formula is sort of the same. It's certainly the same for Wichita State and KU. Certainly. And look, there are varying levels of it, right? KU's better, more talented, and all those things. But the path is the same. Anywho, NFL, Tommy, another wild and crazy day. Trey Hendrickson is the big one, probably. There's a lot of them, though. You know, Christian Kirk going to the Texans, I think, is a big deal. I love that for the Texans, who don't know what's going to happen with Tank Dell long term. Love it for the Texans. And good for Jacksonville, who's going to have to cut him anyway for getting something for him. So that was, I think, a pretty significant move. But this Trey Hendrickson news that he has been granted the ability to request a trade, that's another one. You thought Joey Bosa was the big deal being cut. Now Trey Hendrickson's out there. We're looking at an offseason here, Tommy, where Joey Bosa, Myles Garrett, and Trey Hendrickson are available to varying degrees. Three of the best pass rushers in football are all potentially out there for somebody to go get, which is fascinating to me. What do you do? Then you add in DK Metcalf is available. There's just a lot of players out there. I honestly, like, Cincinnati's situation, we'll start with Hendrickson because Myles Garrett's the most attractive, but Hendrickson's right there. A dude that's been at the top of the game, the top of the pass rushing game for 2 years. I do think last year slightly inflated because Cincinnati knew they were going to be up against a passing attack in every game that they played. So he could pin his ears back just a little bit. He was great the year before too. Cincinnati's making a decision where they're going to go with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. They're going to get both of those guys paid, to hell with defense, and see what happens. I don't think I agree with that. I think if you were telling me I had to choose Trey Hendrickson or T. Higgins, as much as I love T. Higgins and I love T. Higgins, I think I'd take Hendrickson and take my chances. But it is supposedly a deep draft class at pass rushers. So, okay, Cincinnati, we'll see what happens. But that's the decision they're making. Hendrickson being out there is interesting because he and Garrett both are, like, if they're traded, they're going to get first round value. But it's one of those things where you have to be willing to give up draft capital to get them, Tommy, and you have to be willing essentially to give them their long term extension. They're both likely, I would say, to surpass Max Crosby's deal. He just signed to become the highest paid non-quarterback. So you have to be ready to commit that kind of deal and give up draft capital to get either of them. That probably makes it a little bit more difficult to find a trade partner.
Going back to T. Higgins, I'm still not 100% convinced that he will be a member of the Bengals when next season kicks off. I wouldn't be shocked if the whole reason that they tagged him was to trade him. Now, they could always sign him to a long-term extension, but that's been floating out there for a while. Same thing with Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, I know, like, there's been a lot of discussions about what that wide receiver room looks like long-term, but I'm not 100% convinced that he will be there when the season starts. I wouldn't be shocked if they try to find a trade partner and, you know, try to free up even more room. But yeah, the Trey Hendrickson stuff is surprising to me. Just because, you know, he's been a pretty dominant guy. He's been a pretty dominant pass rusher in his time with the Bengals. And you compare and contrast, You've got Hendrickson, you mentioned Myles Garrett, and of course Joey Bosa, all three of those guys available, while at the same time, Max Crosby is getting an extension with the Raiders. And so it's interesting how teams are valuing pass rush and how some are like, hey, we're gonna cut you. We're not gonna sign you long term. We're not gonna make you the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. But then meanwhile, the Raiders to Max Crosby are like, yeah, we'll go ahead and sign you. We'll go ahead and do that. And I know financially, cap space-wise, every team is different, but it's just interesting to see some of these top-tier, elite-level pass rushers now out there available for teams to go and get. Meanwhile, Max Crosby is getting the largest non-quarterback deal in the NFL.
Yeah, and Charles Minihue said something about, I'm out. He said something somewhere on social media, so he's another one that goes out there, but he maybe becomes a discount. Is Charles Minihue like a big loser in this to know that these other guys are available? Probably.
Well, anytime you have more supply in a position, the demand kind of levels out and goes down a little bit. I mean, it's the same way we talked about it yesterday with some of the wide receivers that are free agents that are not the top free agent wide receivers. Their value goes down. You know, guys like I'm thinking Hollywood Brown and Juju and DeAndre Hopkins, like because you have these top tier elite level Devontae Adams and, others that are available out there right now for signing. It's the same way with pass rush. You know, you've got some of the next tier down pass rushers, and I would put Charles Minihue in that list. He's a good pass rusher, but he's not Myles Garrett, right? He's not Trey Hendrickson. It brings his value down somewhat, or at least levels it off, because you've got guys that are above him that are going to be looking for deals now too.
It also makes me wonder, and we talked about this the other day, so if the trend now is to run the ball a little bit, if the trend is for defenses to play quarterbacks a different way, is there any, and I don't think this is the case, but I'll say it anyway, it is the position being devalued at all, right? Is defense being played a different way but that's never going to not be important. It's the most disruptive thing you can do is rush the passer. It's how the Eagles just won a Super Bowl. So I don't think that's the case. But it's interesting to see the kind of Joey Bosa's makes sense, right? He's always hurt. He's older. He's expensive. I get it. And it's not like Cleveland wants to trade Myles Garrett. They don't want to trade Myles Garrett. So maybe Hendrickson is an outlier in an offseason where a few other odd things have happened. It could be that simple. It really could be. And I don't even know what the appetite to get Hendrickson is because of what it'll take to get him and knowing, and Cincinnati may just be like, look, you can go out and seek a trade. If you can go out there and find us a first round pick in a return, we know we're probably not going to be able to re-sign you after your current deal. Okay, go do it. We'd love the help. Thanks. It could be that simple, because I'm sure they'd love to have him back if he doesn't find a trade partner, right? Like if they can't find a good fit, you don't think the Bengals will be like, welcome him back with open arms?
Sure. And I know with Myles Garrett at the same way, it's kind of the same level. The Browns are trying to figure out everything that they can possibly do to clear space. And I know they would love to keep Garrett for sure, but I know they restructured Deshaun Watson's contract again, a simple restructure. So it's not like it's a major deal, but they did a little bit to try to free up some room there. They've got to try to figure some things out as well to get out from underneath that terrible Watson contract. If Myles Garrett ends up being a casualty of that, that's unfortunate. I mean, that's roster mismanagement. That's cap mismanagement. That's all of those things. So you've got, these teams that are trying to figure it all out. It makes you grateful for the fact that with Kansas City, they've been a lot more masterful in managing the salary cap. You can't pay everybody, but they've done better outside of Juwan Taylor's deal. They've done better overall in managing their salary cap. So they're not in situations quite like this.
Yeah, they're always difficult. They're going to watch Minihue walk. They're probably going to watch Justin Reed walk. They might watch Nick Bolton walk. They just traded Joe Tooney. Like, it's never easy. They're never easy.
But they don't have guys that are requesting trades away from the team, right? Like, they don't have guys that they would like to keep that are requesting to be done with them. That's one area where it is different, right?
Tyreek Hill did that exact
thing. I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about era.
They've handled it well right. when it happened.
That's my
with
point.
Hill,
yeah.
They did a fantastic job. They've been good at navigating it. The problem is there's not enough money in a salary cap to go around. So what are you supposed to do? Like the teams There's not much the teams can do. It'd be one thing if they were just sitting on a pile of money there, but they can only spend so much. So you have to make the calls. Cincinnati's just making the call to go with the two wide receivers for Joe Burrow. I mean, that's pretty simple. And it's really unfortunate for one of the worst defenses in football. Something to pay attention to if you're a fantasy football player, because their defense is probably going to suck again now. And Joe Burrow has his full complement of weapons. So, I think it really hurts Cincinnati. They'll have to have a magical draft or an offseason probably to be able to contend for a title next year. But we know they'll be able to get there offensively. But if you needed to improve your defense, you just traded away one of the league's best defensive players, or are seemingly about to. At his request, not theirs. But it's simple math. They sign Higgins, they can't sign Hendrickson. Hendrickson knows that, and he says, hey guys, can I go get my deal somewhere else now? And I don't blame him after what you just saw for Max Crosby. He's had nothing but good things to say. They've had nothing but good things to say. Meanwhile, I'm just seeing reporting that Myles Garrett and the Browns owner are refusing to even talk to each other. You know, both directions. So, for what it's worth, it doesn't always go rosy like it did for Tyreek Hill, for instance, or it's doing. All right, we'll take a quick break. Hour number two coming up, Sports Daily.